Perek
Yud Aleph, right? Perek Yud Aleph.
So here you get. So if you remember, we had set up last week that this Malach. What are you doing? That this Malach tells him that he's going to tell him of the future, and here you go in his extremely, extremely detailed telling of the future. Va'ani. This is what we're up to, right? Perek Yud Aleph. Right? Isn't that what we did?
Yeah.
I thought we were halfway in a Nebuah.
Right. Which was between Yud and Aleph.
Yeah, okay.
So in the first year of Darius, I took my stand to strengthen and fortify him. Va'ata. So now he says, let me tell you the truth. Va'ata emet agidlach. Hine, od shlosha melachim omdim lefaras, verivi ya'ashir osher gadol mikol, ukechezkato v'ashro ya'ir hakol machut yavad. Persia will have three more kings, and then the fourth will be wealthier than all the three, and by the power he obtains through Israel, he will stir everyone up against the kingdom of Greece. Then a warrior king will appear who will have extreme dominion and doing as he pleases. But after his appearance, his kingdom will be broken up, scattered to the four winds of heaven, but not for his posterity, not for his children, nor with dominion like that which he had, for his kingdom will be uprooted and belong to others besides these. So the king of the south will grow powerful. However, one of his officers will overpower him and rule and have extensive dominion. And after some years, an alliance will be made. The daughter of the king of the south will come to the king of the north to make the agreement, but will not maintain her strength, nor will his strength endure. She'll be surrendered together with those who escorted her, and the one who begot her and helped her during those times. Right?
This is a Navi?
Yes. Daniel.
That's freakish.
And we'll see. Once we get through this, you will see how these extremely detailed points are actually on point. So shoot, for her children will appear in his place, will come against the army, enter the fortress of the king of the north, he'll fight and overpower them. He'll take their gods with their images, their precious vessels, silver, and go back to Mitzrayim as spoils. And for some years he'll leave the king of the north alone. Later invade the king of the south. We'll go back to his land. If you're not following all this, it's okay. His sons will wage war, collecting a multitude of great armies, who will advance and sweep through as a flood, and will again wage war as far as his stronghold. Then the king of the south, in his rage, will go out and battle him with the king of the north. He'll muster a great multitude, but the multitude will be delivered into the foe's power. This goes on for a while.
Why we're in all
these
Nebuahs like this?
It's
really weird.
This is like the most specific. When the multitude is carried off, he'll grow arrogant, he'll cause myriads to perish, but will not prevail. Then the king of the north will again muster a multitude greater than the first, and after a time, a number of years, he'll advance with a great army and much baggage. Dorm bird. Come on. In those times, many will resist the king of the south, and the lawless sons of your people will assert themselves to confirm the vision, but they will fail. You don't get any nevuah, anything this specific, in any other nevi. Like, and then king of the north will advance and throw up siege ramps and capture a fortress city, and the force of the south will not hold out, even the elite army powerless to resist. But his opponent will do as he pleases, for none will hold out against him. He'll install himself in a beautiful land with destruction within his reach. V'yasein panav levo betokiv kol machuto v'yasher mimo v'asav uvat hanashim yiten lo lashkidav lo tamod v'lo tiyeh. He'll set his mind about invading the strongholds through the foe's kingdom, but in order to destroy it, he'll effect an agreement with him and give him a daughter in marriage, and he won't succeed it, and it won't come about. V'yasein panav layim v'lachad rabim v'shbit katsin charpato lo bilti charpato yeshiv lo. He'll turn to the coast or the islands, capture many, but a consul put an end to his insults and pay him back for his insults. V'yashav panav lemuzei artzov v'nechshal v'nafal v'matzei. He'll head back to strongholds of his own land, and he'll stumble and fall and vanish. V'amar al kano. Oh my God. V'amar al kano mavir nogeish. Nogeish hedr malchut. U'v'yamim achadim yishaver v'lo paim v'lo melchama. His place will be taken by one who will dispatch an officer to extract tribute for his royal glory, but it'll be broken in a few days, not by wrath or by war. His place will be taken by contemptible men on whom royal majesty was not conferred. He'll come in unawares, seize his kingdom through trickery. The force of the flood will be overwhelmed by him, will be broken, and so to the covenant leader, and from the time an alliance is made with him, he'll practice deceit, he'll rise to power with a small band. How many more psukim to this?
I'm not sure. I don't even know.
Only 20.
20 more? 20 more? 5 more?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it goes up till 45.
Okay. Bishalvam ishmanim in yavavasa asher lo asu avatav avaravatav bizavishal ruchush lahem yivzor v'alvim tzorim yichashem achshavot v'ad eight. He'll invade the richest of provinces unawares and will do what his father and forefathers never did, lavishing on them spoiled booty and wealth. He'll have designed among Trogdals, but only for a time. V'yair kolchol v'vo al melech hanegev v'chel gadol melech hanegev yitgarel melchama v'chel gadol v'atzumad ba'od v'lo yamod ki yachshavu olav machshavot. He'll muster his strength, courage against the king of the south and a great army. The king of the south will wage war with a very great and powerful army, but will not stand fast, for they'll devise plans against him. And those who eat his food will eat of his food will ruin him. His army will be overwhelmed, and many will be slain. The minds of both kings will be bent on evil while sitting at the table together. They'll lie to each other, but to no avail, for there's yet an appointed term. He'll return to his land with great wealth, his mind set against the Holy Covenant, and done his pleasure, return to his land. At the appointed time, he'll again evade the south, but the second time will not be like the first. Ships from Kitim will come against him, he'll have checked, he'll turn back, raging against the Holy Covenant, having done his pleasure. He will then attend to those who forsook the Holy Covenant. Forces will be levied against them. They'll desecrate the temple, the fortress. They'll abolish the Tamid, set up Brit Yachanif Bachalakot. He'll flatter with smooth those who act wickedly towards the covenant, but the people devoted to God will stand firm. The knowledgeable amongst the people will make the many understand, and for a while they shall fall by sword and flame, suffer captivity and spoliation, is how they translate it, spoliation. In defeat they'll receive little help, and many will join them in Sir Silim. Add 8 kates, ki od lamoed. Some of the knowledge will fall. They may be refined and purged and whitened until the end of time. For the interval still remains until the appointed time. V'asachar tzono ha-melech v'yit romeim v'yit gadel al kol el v'al el elim yidaber niflod v'yitzlechad kal azam kinechason estah. The king will do as he pleases, exalt and magnify himself above every god, speak awful things against the god of gods. He'll prosper until wrath is spent and what has been decreed is accomplished. He won't have regard for the God of his ancestors or for the one dear to women, and he will not have regard for any God, but will magnify himself above all. He'll honor the God of fortresses as his stand. He'll honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and costly things, a God that his ancestors never knew. You read through this. This is like so different from the rest of Daniel, where it's like, what's going on? And here it's, let me explain every last detail of this. He'll deal with fortified strongholds with the help of an alien god. He'll heap honors on those who acknowledge him. He'll make them master over many. He'll distribute that land for a price. At the end, the king of the south will lock horns with him, but the king of the north will attack him with chariots and riders and ships. He'll invade lands, sweeping through them like a flood, invade the beautiful lands. Many will fall, but some will escape his clutches, Edom, Moab, and part of Ammon, the chief part of Ammon. He'll lay his hands on lands. Not even the land of Egypt will escape. He'll get control over the treasures of Mitzrayim and the Libyans and the Cushites, etc. But reports from east north will alarm him, and he will march forth in a great fury to destroy and annihilate many. He'll pitch his royal pavilion in the sea in the beautiful holy mountain, and he will meet his doom with no one to help him. That's just the political part, and then Parak Yudbet picks up with the spiritual part, but let's stop there for a minute. Okay, that was took me 10 minutes just to read through. So,
wait, so why do they say Daniel never got real Nebuah?
Well, let's first figure out what this is. Okay, what did we just read? So, I will now, from Rav Meidan. Here it describes in minute detail the history of Greek rule in Eretz Israel. The details are surprisingly accurate. Mm-hmm. And Abarbanel uses this as proof of the power of prophecy. Whether or not we accept this, for every detailed vision, there is a real corresponding historical event. And here are some of the more important developments for our discussion. Okay, so Pasuk Gimel, the mighty king is?
Alexander.
The empire will be given to his successors. Who are his successors? How many kings does it say?
Four.
Good, who are they?
Ptolemy.
King of the south is Ptolemy. And his dynasty ruled in Egypt, emerging from the other context. Who's the king of the north?
Seleucus.
Good, so those are the first. The first and his dynasty, who ruled over Syria and the lands of the Tigris and Euphrates. That's the king of the north, who would conquer Eretz Yisrael. These, the kings of the north, would conquer Eretz Yisrael from the Ptolemies. Right, which is what it says in Pasuk K, right? Pasuk K, what was Pasuk K?
Yeah.
Go back.
Yes.
Pasuk K was? Which is, right? Yeah. The kings of the north would conquer the kings of the south, which is what happened at the end of the 3rd century, where the northern kingdoms conquered the Ptolemies. So then you get the alliance of the northern and southern king through marriage ties, which actually happened, which is Berenice, the daughter of Ptolemy II, Philadelphus, married Antiochus II in 252 BCE following the Second Syrian War. Mm-hmm. Right? So that is right exactly what the Pesukim said, that the north and southern kingdoms will create an alliance through marriage, which they did. But it didn't last, and they were all put to death by Laodice, Antiochus' first wife and the mother of Seleucus II, because she objected to her children being deprived of their royal inheritance. Which, what do you get in Pasuk Vav?
Lokit Shanim Yishabru Ubasnach Hanegev Tavo El Melech Hatzafon Lasos Mei Sharm.
Right, the alliance will be made because of the marriage of the daughter of the king of the south with the king of the night, but she won't maintain her strength, nor with his power endure, which is what happened, because she'll be surrendered together with those who escorted her. And the one who begot her and helped her during those times, her mother, is the one who, right, undermined this, because she didn't like this. Right, or stepmother, whatever. Uh-huh. Right, it's her stepmother. Which is exactly what the Pesukim say. That's what happened. That was undermined by the king's first wife.
I don't understand. The south, the Ptolemaic kingdom is supposed to be allied with the Seleucid.
They are, because of a marriage of Berenice, the daughter of Ptolemy II, to Antiochus II.
Okay.
Right? But then they were all put to death by Antiochus II's first wife, who was the mother of Seleucus II, because she didn't like her children being deprived of royal inheritance, which is what the Pasuk says.
How are they being deprived of royal inheritance?
What? Meaning she's the first wife. This is the second wife. Right? The second wife's children are... The second wife Antiochus married into Egypt, so they're the ones who create the...
I see.
As opposed to the first wife... has them killed, so that her sons who are the sons of the first wife of the king, will be king, rather than the kids of the second wife, who's the one who married into the covenant, right? That's what happened. So then, Pasuk Zayin and Chet tells you that what? That the south will take revenge on the north. Right, you're following along with me?
Yeah. Wait.
That's what
for killing their...
Correct. Now, that's actually what happened. That Ptolemy III, who was the son of this Berenice from the south, took revenge on Seleucus II, the son of Laodice from the north, and prevailed against him. Mm-hmm. Then, the children of Seleucus II, which was Seleucus III and Antiochus III, fought back against the king of the south, which is Ptolemy IV, Philopator, until the battle of Raphia in 217 BCE, where the king of the south prevailed, but ultimately Antiochus III would defeat Ptolemy V Epiphanes in the battle of Gaza in 201 BCE, which is Pasuk Yud through Tet Vav, which is that back and forth, conquered Eretz Israel, which is exactly what they said they would do. This Antiochus sought to rule, to extend his rule against over Egypt by having his daughter Cleopatra marry Ptolemy V, which is 193 BCE, but his plan failed, which is Pasuk Yud Zayin, right? Which is, he'll have in mind to invade the strongholds, and he'll, in order to destroy it, he'll effect an agreement and give his daughter in marriage, but he won't succeed and it won't come about. Which is, again, exactly what happened. It's really crazy, right? Of all the Nevuot, like there's all the Nevuot, we have no idea what they mean, and now we have this one down to, we know exactly historically what's going on.
It's like as if, I mean, it's like, Father, you give you a whole ton of crap, but just so you know it's going to be real.
Yes, exactly. Then, in Pasuk Yudchet, he turns to the coastlands and captures many, which is, what does he do then, what does he do next? He conquers Turkey and Greece in 196 to 191 BCE. But it says he only gets some of them, and not all of them, which is in fact what happens, because he was beaten back by the Roman Scipio in 190 BCE at Magnesia, and he was set off for Elam in 187 BCE, and he was killed in Elam in 187 BCE, which is Pasuk Yutet. That he'll head back to the strongholds of his own land, but will stumble, fall, and vanish after failing to take all of them. It really, this is one of those things, like, of Nevuah, this is like. So then he is succeeded by his son, Seleucus IV, who sent his minister, Heliodorus, to plunder the Beit HaMikdash, and then his minister assassinated him, which is Pasuk Chaf, and Chaf Aleph, right? Because his place will be taken by its contemptible man. It'll be broken in a few days, but not by wrath, not by war, right? By by assassination. Then, so Pasuk Chaf Aleph is, he'll be taken over by a contemptible man on whom royal majesty was not conferred, which is Antiochus IV Epiphanes, who had all the terrible decrees against the Jews. That's the Antiochus of Hanukkah, right? He's the terrible king predicted in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, who then conquers Egypt from the hands of Ptolemy VI through cunning, which is Pasuk Chav Gimel to Chav Zion. Okay? So, So, as it turns out, that this was extremely detailed. Now, this Fur of Medan is the main reason that he has argued over and over that all of Daniel's prophecies are not about most of them are not about Yemot HaMashiach, but they're about the Greek period, right? They're Persian and Greek period. And this is his main proof, because here's where you get the only clear Nevuah in the entire book. And it is as detailed as you can possibly get. In the of the Greeks, and you do see here that part of the reason that the Torah disintegrates in the middle of this, right? People stop keeping the Torah, is because we know historically that the Jews get involved in all of these political alliances, back forth, right? It was such a mess, but the Jews were on both sides, right? So the politics there
is always That's why he wrote it down, I guess, I'm assuming.
Well, maybe, but where do we see this most? In Hanukkah. Because when you have it where it's the Jews against the Hellenizers, right? This is what, right? It's the Jews are involved in the politics intimately. Right? This isn't just the Egyptians versus the Greeks, it's the Jews living there against each other because they're on different sides of the government. So what now? But what's the point? Why does he get such an insanely detailed nevuah, which actually isn't done, right? Because the first 13 psukim in Perek Yud Bet continue this. Should we leave this for next week? The angelic part of it and the purpose of these. Now that we've just gotten the politics down.
How many psukim?
What? It's the first 13 psukim of. Meaning it's. Sorry. It's all. That's all of it. That's the whole thing. It's the rest of the book. What am I saying? The rest of the book is is the last 13 psukim. I guess let's leave it. Yeah, I guess let's leave it because Perek Yud Bet is where we get the sort of the angelic piece to this. So far, it's just the politics, and there we'll figure out the meaning of this. The last thing we'll have to do in Daniel when we're finished with that is so okay there. Let's just set it up, and then maybe we'll do it next week. There are two things that happen in Perek Yud Bet. One is that you get the end of this prophecy, the angelic part of it, the meaning of this, right? So far, all we've done is done the pure politics of this thing. But in Pasuk Bet, if you look, you get Verabim Minishe Admar Afar Yakitsu El Chayolam Ve'El Charfot Lejaron Olam. The most explicit source in all of Tanakh for Tchir HaMesim. Tchiyat HaMeitim, it should be either Tchiyat HaMeitim or Tchiyat HaMeitim, not Tchiyat HaMeitim. That doesn't make any sense, or whatever I just said. But one of those. Take your pick, Ashkenazis or Sfaradit, but not a mix. Bet. This is the source for Tchiyat, the most explicit source that the Gemara finds for Tchiyat HaMeitim, which is pretty explicit, which is many of those who sleep in dust will awaken. Right? That. This is the source for Tchiyat HaMeitim. So we're going to have to do that as well. But I guess it'll probably have to take us two more weeks, right? One to sort of finish off, unless you want to do it now. But I feel like just getting the politics down was exhausting. I know it was exhausting for me. Yeah, I don't know if part of this is to prove, like, you know, what Rafi said, which is to prove that Nevuah can be. Ravashi, we just did, you know, Perek Yud Aleph in Daniel, that 50 pasuk summary of every single back and forth between the Persians, Greeks, Syrians, and Egyptians, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, extremely detailed. It is like phenomenally detailed and spot on in terrifying, terrifying ways. Okay, yeah, I guess. Yeah, should we just wait it out? Let's wait it out. Okay, so we'll finish Daniel in either 1 or 2 weeks. You know, probably 2. My guess is 2. Okay, good. That's not bad because it's let's see. That means we'll finish like beginning of Adar. That's not bad. You know, we have time to do something. Okay.